All right. This title was already announced, and so let's get started. With a little bit of perhaps lack of precision, one can say that a few things have become fairly clear this year based on sense conjectures. Essentially, we understand that D-brains are Dakin solitons. Second, we've seen that string field theory is really a non-perturbative formulation of string theory. You can get some non-perturbative physics out of it. Has been verified for the open string. I believe it will be eventually true for the closed string as well. Third, I think we also know now the open string Dakin potentials, and it really has to do with boundary string field theory, and I'll present the insight we got into this by doing some sort of baby version of boundary string field theory through some Dakin models. And finally, the last point is the point that will be the second half of my talk, in which I will discuss a proposal for string field theory around the stable vacuum of the Dakin. So as I just said, we'll have mainly two topics. Simple field theory models of Dakin dynamics, and then the proposal for this Dakin vacuum and a string field theory around it. I think these models are interesting in that they turned out to give the exact Dakin potentials that were later confirmed by boundary string field theory calculations. In boundary string field theory, you get something like the effective potential of the tachyon. In the simplest cases, I will not begin by considering gauge fields. And these potentials were actually guessed by these models we proposed here. The second topic, of course, is more deep. And it's the issue of writing a precise string field theory for the vacuum of the tachyon. The first subject was done in collaboration with Joe Minahan, and the second with Leonardo Rastelli and Ashok Sen here. In fact, Sen's talk tomorrow will deal with the second subject, that string field theory around the Dakin vacuum, explaining some explicit calculations we did there. So, here I say it's a good question you could have asked at the beginning of this year when the Dakin potentials were not known about the scalar field theory. And the question is, can you find a scalar potential that does the following things? At the maximum, you have a Dakin. That's, of course, very easy. At the minimum, the Dakin acquires infinite mass. That's a little harder. And finally, you would ask that this scalar field theory would have a codimension one lump solution representing a lower dimensional brain. And on this lump, you would like to ask what lives on this lump. And you would find that there's, again, a tachyon of the same mass and a massless scalar and massive scalars precisely separated by the unit interval that you get in string theory. The surprise is that simple field theories just of a Dakin can do these things, and then turned out, since they were so nice, to be in fact the right answer. So I want to just give a little insight first into some intuition we have here. If you have a scalar field theory, as illustrated there on top, and then you have a kink, then the spectrum of things that live on the kink is controlled by a Schrödinger potential that is well known, and that Schrödinger potential is related to the potential in the field theory by taking two derivatives and evaluating it on the kink. By taking two derivatives of the potential, essentially, at least at the critical points, that would be the effective mass of the particle, and we can put an X there, being a little imprecise. But the intuition is that if you have, for example, this kink solution over here, the Schrödinger potential, in fact, the continuum part of the Schrödinger potential tells us a lot about the vacuum of this theory. Here the king goes from one vacuum, the left to the right vacuum, and then the Schrödinger potential, for example, for x large, you must ask what is the second derivative of at the value of the field that takes for x large, then for x large you take phi zero, the second derivative is m zero squared, so therefore the Schrödinger potential goes to this value. And therefore the continuum part of the spectrum of this Schrödinger problem, what appears on top of the potential, really knows precisely what's going on at the vacuum of the tachyon. Now there's a we were led by these considerations, actually, in a rather indirect way, to an interesting class of Schrödinger potentials. Please excuse me here, every U should be really an X. I kept changing notation, apparently. These potentials are solvable, have a well-known spectrum, and a continuous spectrum that sets in after a few discrete states. And they can be solved recursively. There's a technique for solving them recursively. In fact, we were led to these Schrödinger potentials by considering the approximation in which the tachyon field theory would be what you have in just cubic string field theory if you threw away, which is not legal, all the other fields. It would be a mass squared and a cubic term. And that theory, if you found the solitons, the lumps, it turned out that the spectrum of the lumps was controlled by the case U3, when L is equal to 3. So then you were, by studying this problem, were led to consider the case L going to infinity, in which case the potentials with a suitable scaling limit become the simple harmonic oscillator potentials, and those were the ones we would be interested in. So in fact, one could have bosonic models for the bosonic string, and here they are discussing a little more generality than we need, and therefore, for the purposes of time, I will not explain everything that we see over here. But basically, if you're given a lump profile, you can synthesize a field theory, a scalar field theory, that will have such thing as the profile of a lump solution. And in particular, for the potentials we discussed in the previous page, the lump profiles would be this, and at infinity, just simply this e to the minus t over 4. So the case L equal infinity leads to this field theory, at least presented in this form, in which there's a prefactor for the kinetic term and a prefactor for the this term together with this make the tachyon potential. In the original field variables, we did this. It looked like a canonically normalized scalar field without a factor in front and this potential. And, this model was, a few weeks later, discovered that it was exactly what would emerge in boundary string field theory. So this original model has a tachyon on the lump. If you just analyze it as a field theory, you can find the lump is a Gaussian, and if you look at the spectrum around the lump, you find again a tachyon of mass minus 1, a scalar field of mass 0, 1, 2, 3, up to infinity, and indeed also if you roll to the vacuum of this tachyon, you also find that the mass of the tachyon goes to infinity. For the superstring, people found that in boundary string field theory, the bosonic potential was correct, so we decided to do the case of the superstring, in which case you had to synthesize field theories that produce specific kinks. Here the problem is solved in generality. If you have a monotonically growing kink, you can find the potential and the action that would give it. It's related to the derivatives of the kink in this form. And for those L models, this is finite L, and this is L going to infinity. Therefore, you derive this model as a rather nice model of what would happen in the superstring. And it has all kinds of pretty features. That is, for example, you have a In the original field theory, if you have a tachyon of mass minus 1/2, if you go to the kink, it will have fluctuations of mass 0, then 1, 2, 3, 4, double spacing of the mass of the tachyon. So, in fact, this model, a couple of weeks later, in fact, was obtained in boundary string field theory as well. Now, in general, I want to say a little more about this model. For arbitrary k, for arbitrary L, this is a family of models in which the tachyon would not acquire infinite mass at the bottom of the potential. But you can analyze in general the fluctuations of the tachyon and its spectrum, and it's controlled by a Schrödinger problem that arises from these terms. In fact, when you take the value of k that we chose for a particular L, you get the potentials U sub L, and for this infinity limit, you get the simple harmonic oscillator, as I said. Well, since these models were pretty good in producing these predictions, we tried as well, but after people began to discuss this in boundary string field theory, so the initial analyses were done by these people, and they were motivated, most of them, by this structure proposed by Sen. So what we did was to just take these general L models. We're interested in things that are solvable for general L. This helps guess what kind of structure you need. And we put this term over here, that at least if you're asking what are going to be the fluctuations of the gauge field, it suffices to even describe this case, because you just need the quadratic part of F. So you can ask the question, once the tachyon condenses to form a kink, what lives on this kink? This was actually for the case of a superstring, so here you should read kink. Well, that can be analyzed. You know what the tachyon does. The kink, we know it explicitly, and, well, it puts conditions. And what you find after a little while is that the mass spectrum of the gauge field on the kink is controlled by the same functions that control the tachyon. Therefore, for finite L, well, actually, let me say, in general, you get massless gauge field, one massless gauge field, a lot of massive gauge fields, and if L is finite, remember, for the case of the tachyon, if L is finite, the mass of the tachyon at the end is finite, and therefore there's a continuum spectrum. So for L finite, also the gauge field will have a continuum spectrum. So actually, in these models, remember, when the tachyon goes to the vacuum, that's tachyon going to infinity, the derivative of this function over here will go to zero, and whatever the prefactor of the gauge field goes to zero. But nevertheless, even though for finite L, despite the vanishing of the prefactor of F squared, we see evidence that of conventional massive gauge fields on the tachyon vacuum. Because on the kink, we found the continuum spectrum. Therefore, it must mean that far away in the vacuum of the kink solution, you would have presumably conventional massive gauge fields, which is a little strange, but seems to be the case. This is for finite L. For infinite L, the continuum of the gauge field disappears, so alternatively, this would be evidence that there's no conventional degrees of freedom there in the case of the real tachyon potential. But of course, despite much work by many people that I haven't mentioned here yet, this whole issue of how the gauge field disappears in the vacuum is a little confusing. So I think with these finite L models, you get some extra insight into what's going on. Well, let me just flash this very briefly, but these results can be extended to couple fermions. They can be used to understand actions, generalized Born-Infeld forms proposed in which the kinetic terms of the tachyon go in here. If you look at the spectrum of the gauge field fluctuations, actually the spacing doesn't quite come right. And I don't know if this is because we're just missing some higher derivatives or otherwise. For the bosonic model, there are two possible solvable couplings, essentially, of the gauge fields. One that would be Born infill type form, the top one, and one that would be a little simpler. Actually, the bottom one that is not quite Born infill form is the one that gives the correct spacing for the levels of the gauge fields. Anyway, I now start to change gears by showing a model that was also produced this year. Well, the model was known for a while, the Piatic string model. It's a model in which you have all kinds of derivatives. While the previous models that I was writing had just two derivatives, space-time derivatives, these ones have derivatives to all orders. And actually, P is prime, but even though mathematicians say one is not prime, we can take limit as we go to one. In fact, was done by Gerasimov and Shatashvili, and you obtain the L equal infinity bosonic model. That's interesting because this model is solvable in many ways. Now, for P equal two, that would be some sort of phi cube model in which you are sort of getting a more or less attacking potential that is conventional. But look here. There's an exponential of momentum here. And this actually, this potential goes like this. And this is the stable vacuum. This is the vacuum where you have a D-brain. And actually, you can redefine the Takian field by taking away the momentum dependence. There's no poles. There's no zeros in this kinetic term because of the exponential. And therefore, you can get a regular kinetic term and all the momentum dependence being in the interactions. And I will touch base with this in a few minutes. So now, leaving those models, let me consider the string field theory around the Takian vacuum. It's a paper that appeared like 8 days ago. And there's two aims for this study, I would say. The first one is the practical one at this moment is would like to understand the complete disappearance of the perturbative open string excitations on the Takian vacuum as the brain disappears. This is the second aspect of this conjectures of Sen. The first aspect is that the difference of energy between the D-brain vacuum and the stable vacuum is the energy of the brain. And second, we would like to find a more flexible formulation of string field theory. So it's natural to begin this analysis, I believe, in cubic open string field theory, the string field theory of Witten proposed in 86. Now, even though boundary string field theory has really done nice things for us this year, there's some things that make this problem still, at present stage of development, easier or more plausible that it could be treated with this string field theory. First is that this string field theory has all the degrees of freedom of the D-brain incorporated there. And therefore, if you have them all and you track them carefully, you can ask what happens to them. In boundary string field theory, at least at the present stage of development, it's very difficult to include all the degrees of freedom. We don't know if somebody will figure out how to do that well sometime, but at present it seems very difficult. Therefore, the question of what happens after you condense is not quite well as well posed, because you didn't have the states there in your action or in your formulation to begin with. So you need a formulation where you sort of have them and you see them go. Moreover, as you saw in these transparencies and the talk of Per before, the Takian vacuum is at infinity, and in boundary string field theory, there's possible complications with the coordinate systems at infinity and suggest that the analysis could be difficult there. Well, the action we wrote there, cubic string field theory action, is consistent on account of a series of properties of the BRST operator, squares to zero, it's a derivation, it's BPZ conjugation, where the inner product has some properties over here, some cyclicity condition, there's associativity, and given all these properties, the action is invariant under a gauge transformation. More deeply, it solves the Batalion-Wilkowiski classical master equation, but gauge transformations will do here. So in principle, what we should do in order to ask the question of what happens at the Takion vacuum is find the solution that describes the Takion vacuum and then expand around the Takion vacuum. Well, once you expand around the Takion vacuum, you get a constant, which is the brain energy. And then in addition to the constant, you will get a new action with a new BRST operator that will be defined in terms of the old and the string field that took you to the new vacuum. Now, since this satisfies a field equation, you can prove that this new BRST operator satisfies all these identities over here. Therefore, that action is consistent. Now, the difficulty is, and I think that in many ways is the most important problem that remains to be solved here, is that this expression for phi zero, despite very good numerical approximations to it that exist, particularly the work of Taylor and Moller, at this moment, this is still unknown as a closed form expression. And in addition, once you have this field, you may have to do a field redefinition to clear up the form of the kinetic term. So an homogeneous field redefinition, for example, that if it's generated by an operator that has these extra two properties, would preserve the cubic term of the field theory, and you would just modify the BRST operator. So there's a couple of hurdles that we have to clear before we can do this derivation. So one can reach the conclusion that if there is a simple form of the string field theory around the Takion vacuum, at least at present, it would be easier to guess it than to derive it. So we're going to try something like that. So we will say that perhaps the string field theory will just be cubic, as it's suggested by the fact that there's a solution and you will shift and it would still remain cubic. And the field redefinitions to clear it up are not too complicated. And therefore, this Q just has to satisfy these identities because the inner product, we keep it to be the same. In particular, if you have this to represent the vacuum of the Takion, you must have these identities for gauge invariance. Q must have vanishing cohomology, which would say no physical states present. Q must be essentially universal, that is, should not depend on the details of what brain you started with. And you can try to see if you can find such thing. Well, the simplest possibility that satisfies this is Q equals zero. Now, that's too simple, I believe. This gives a formulation that people tried some time ago. In fact, something called purely cubic formulation. Now, there's technical problems in trying to analyze this theory precisely because it doesn't have a kinetic term. But in addition, there's a more serious conceptual problem. At least the formal solutions that take you from the original string field theory to the purely cubic don't change the vacuum energy. And that's bad because the solutions that go from the D-brain theory to the vacuum theory should change the energy. So you could try something very simple. Q is of ghost number one. And you could take the zero mode of the ghost field to be this new BRST operator. I'm sure many people thought of this, and we heard it from Ed Witten as well. And it seems, of course, a very nice possibility because it certainly is universal, and it would lead to no cohomology, is the fact that this commutator, there exists an operator B0 such that this commutator is 1, and therefore any state annihilated by C0 can really be written as C0 of something. Well, what is more exciting is that actually this C0 satisfies the other properties as well. Maybe that's not completely obvious, but I want to just sketch how you see that.
The cubic vertex of a field theory can be pictured as these three half disks glued, as the colors indicate and the formulas indicate. And on this surface created by the gluing, there's a globally defined quadratic differential. Like in the old times when people first understood why this theory covers moduli space, this was very important, this quadratic differential. This is an object of dimension 2. This has the same form on the three coordinate patches, and therefore you have to check it's consistent under the gluing. In addition, at the singular point of gluing, which is the point Q, it actually has a zero. And here there are a few more technical details about this quadratic differential. On the other hand, once you have an object like this, a well-defined tensor of dimension 2, you get conservation laws by integrating it against an object of dimension minus 1, which is the ghost. So the three string vertex of the string field theory must have a symmetry, a conservation law of this kind, in which these contours represent integration around the three punctures. Here the three half disks have been glued together already to make the vertex, and these three contours can be deformed into this contour and shrunk to zero, and the quadratic differential at the middle has just a zero, so it's no problem shrinking it there. So it actually means that this is true, and with C having this form and the quadratic differential having a second order pole, you get this equation, which shows that C0 is a derivation, and therefore Q equals C0 does satisfy all you want. Therefore, this action, as simple as that, has no cohomology, has no physical states, has a non-trivial interaction, and it is gauge invariant. It's not trivial to achieve all these things, and therefore we thought we should take this action very seriously. In fact, there's a little more freedom in here. You could take, for kinetic terms, any of these operators, just as this one is conserved on the vertex and therefore leads to a derivation, these operators are also conserved, and therefore you have a general choice. Now, actually, the choice is not so big because there's another set of derivations of the vertex constructed with Virasoro operators that just reparametrize the string, keeping the midpoint, and actually they transform the various C's. So to first approximation, if you're not very careful, it would seem that they're all equivalent. I should say that, in fact, in a long time ago, a subclass of these kinetic operators were considered again by Horowitz et al. As solutions that arise again from this tentative cubic string field theory. Now, we don't need those solutions here. We sort of use the result regardless of the possible existence of purely cubic string field theory. And certainly, these authors also noted that with this such operators, you would have no cohomology. Now, these people would want to consider only special kinds of operators. In fact, C0 would not have been allowed. They want operators that annihilate the famous identity string field, which is the last technical point I discuss. The identity string field played an important role in these cubic formulations, and it's a string field that is presumed to have these properties. Now, such a string field really, under all conditions, doesn't exist. In particular, I times I is not equal to I. But for many good string fields, I is a little complicated. This an expansion in Virasoro operators here. But for many good string fields that are like Fock space states, this is true, however. Now, the issue is that if you have a derivation of the star algebra, in principle, if things are regular, that derivation should annihilate the identity. You can always see that fact. Nevertheless, these derivations that we're considering, like C0, do not annihilate the identity, and some do, some don't. And the issue is sort of clear. You can see it like this. This identity string field, the original picture of it was like this. The puncture far away, the interaction point where you close the string is here. And these are the local coordinates, and this is the disk where you essentially glue the two sides, the two end sides over here. Now, this quadratic differential that is nice and clear here, actually, due to the gluing, acquires a pole here. Not in the case of the vertex, it was a zero, but here's a pole. Therefore, C0 does not annihilate the identity. And on the other hand, for example, this combination does.
So if you consider field redefinitions that are regular, it would seem that C0 and this one, for example, are not really related by string field redefinition. So the issue of how unique is this kinetic term for us will have to be left a little undecided, although they are sort of in the same universality class. So
essentially, beginning to conclude, since
this kinetic term has no dynamics, there's no canonical normalization as well of this kinetic term. Therefore, you must try to understand how to normalize it precisely. You could put C0 or you could put 2C0. The action would be gauge invariant anyway. Well, what is striking of this theory is we thought due to the gauge invariance and being qualitatively seeming so nice, we should be able to try to give some evidence that this string field theory is correct. And the most straightforward way to give some computational evidence these days would be to reproduce the lump solutions.
Well, this is a tall order, of course, but in fact, there's a major simplification here, is that because the kinetic operator is purely ghost, you can find a propagator. It's essentially an overlap up to a ghost insertion, and therefore the matter dependence of the tachyons, Green's functions, is calculable exactly. And this could not be done even to any close approximation in the standard cubic open string field theory. So you can study the existence of lump solutions under tensions. The analysis is a little indirect and fairly non-trivial, and it's based on this computation of these Green's functions. And we think it gives very strong evidence that this class of actions is the correct type of actions. And this will be explained tomorrow in the morning, first talk by Ashok Sen. So just to summarize a few conclusions. So these tachyon models I began are two derivative models that appear as special limits of field theories with potentials that have solitons with solvable spectrums. The anticipated BSFT results and may provide the framework to study how the gauge field acquires a mass,
since we have these various Ls in which you see there's a definite mass for finite L, but the mass goes to infinity for L equal infinity.
Actually,
in those models, you could see the tachyon having just a spectrum that on the brain gives you another tachyon, a massless scalar, and massive scalars, and degeneracy equal to 1. Actually, you can find the degeneracies of the gauge field when it localizes, and it localizes to a gauge field that is massless and a single massive gauge field at every level. And actually, those degeneracies together combine to give the correct degeneracies of the lower dimensional brains to the level we've checked. And therefore, it seems like this condition of the spectrum being the correct one was important.
These tachyon models were used also to explain some apparent finite range of marginal parameters in string field theory, but I will not say anything about it. And in particular, in the second part of the talk, we've proposed a very simple class of string field theory actions that may describe the physics of the tachyon vacuum, and it would be a complete definition of that physics. These actions are reminiscent of the piadic string models in that the kinetic terms were regular. Remember, in the piadic models, you could take the momentum dependence, since it had this exponential was totally invertible, and pass it to the interactions. No momenta, but a regular kinetic term for here, and momentum dependence in interaction. This is exactly the way these actions with purely ghost kinetic terms work. And they manifestly implement lack of conventional open string excitations and gauge invariance.
And finally, the simplicity of the n-tachyon Green's functions in this theory will allow a non-trivial test via the computation of the ratios of brain tensions, as you will see tomorrow. Thank you.
Questions?
One on each half of the talk.
Thank you.
In the first half, you talked about massive states that you find in the fluctuation spectrum. And I'm a bit confused about the relation of those massive states to the massive spectrum of open string states. It doesn't seem like you're getting a stringy spectrum in doing the fluctuation spectrum. Are you claiming to get special subset space of the massive string states?
I'm sorry, you're referring about the case of the gauge field, or what case?
Well, you have these lump solutions, and you do the fluctuation spectrum. You said you got a tachyon, which is as desired. You have a massless mode, which is expected by translation invariance, and then you have an infinite tower of massive states.
Correct.
But with a field theory degeneracy, not a stringy degeneracy.
Right.
So that, I mean.
Right.
In string theory, that's not the right spectrum.
Correct. So that's
What is the role of those massive states?
Yeah. So actually, this I was trying to describe that in this term. You see, the tachyon, if you try to localize a gauge field on the brain, suppose you have a gauge field living in the bulk, and you now try to localize it on the brain created by the tachyon soliton, what you will find is a massless gauge field and massive gauge fields. So actually, the translation mode of the brain comes from the tachyon. So the extra scalar that comes at zero mass from the tachyon is combines with the gauge field that you have there to produce the correct spectrum at zero mass. Now you get an extra scalar again, just a single scalar at every mass level, and the gauge field at every mass level higher will produce another massive gauge field. If you go to the next level, you will see that you should get a symmetric tensor, a massive gauge field, and a single massless scalar. And they are all there. So what we're claiming is actually this field theory degeneracy of the tachyon plus the field theory degeneracy of the gauge field. And if you do by hand the field theory degeneracy of the second form, build up actually correctly to the string field theory degeneracies.
So not just the tachyon gauge field, but you have to include other massive modes and the original D-brain to get the full spectrum.
Right.
Okay, that seems quite reasonable. My second question, if I will be brief. When you expand the open string theory about the unstable vacuum, of course, we find closed strings in perturbation theory. Do you see any sign of closed strings with this proposed action around the closed string vacuum?
Yes. Actually, I think if you look at them, they don't quite seem to appear there. I had a marker there in my briefcase. One second. Let me just do a little drawing. In the usual formulation of open string field theory, you get in this loop diagram, you get a closed string pulse when this thing goes to zero length, which actually corresponds to a diagram that actually is more or less like this, in which this length over here, this T, goes actually to zero, and that's where you get the closed string pulse. But actually, you get the closed string pulse from the integral in the neighborhood going to zero. Actually, in this string field theory that we're proposing, you get the endpoint. So you don't get the whole neighborhood of t equal to zero, but actually you just get t equals zero. And that's divergent. And it's one of the conceptual problems with the standard cubic formulation of string field theory, that this divergence, which is the endpoint of the way closed strings arise, actually complicates checking the quantum Batalion-Wilkowski master equation. I think the conventional cubic open string field theory lives very dangerously in a place. It gets the closed string pulse, but almost at the expense of making the qu- quantization of it a little unclear. So we don't quite get the neighborhood of t equals 0. We get the last point. So conventionally, you would think that you don't quite get the closed string pole. So, but given this, this quantization is not quite clear, I would say it's, I'm not so sure you whether you get them or you don't.
I just had one small question. The purely cubic open string field theory of Horowitz et al., do your results give some suggestion what physical state of the brain those represent, that represent?
No, unfortunately, they don't give that. We actually don't know. Certainly Horowitz and I think Susskind said that maybe it represents a 27-dimensional theory, strong coupling limit, but I would be more conventional, and as far as we can tell, it would seem like it was very tempting, I think, for quite a while to think that the purely cubic thing was the tachyon vacuum, but there's this at least apparent difficulty that the energy, the string field, you see, the string field equation you must solve to find the tachyon vacuum is this one. And for the string field that moves you from the cubic formulation to the purely cubic formulation, the string field satisfies this equal to 0 and this equal to 0. And we definitely know from all the work that has been done this year that that's not true in the tachyon vacuum. Each one gives a contribution, and their sum is sort of non-zero, and that's the vacuum energy. So maybe there's something right about the purely cubic theory. Maybe there will someday we'll understand what it really means, but I don't think we know.
Dave?
So this is another question about the question of having closed strings in that vacuum. There is this other way of getting closed strings as electric fluxes.
Yes.
Do you see that?
No, we have not done such an analysis, so we would have to understand in more detail the part of the effective action that corresponds to what would have been the gauge field, and we've only looked at the part of the effective action corresponding to the tachyon, so the analysis has not been done in this formulation yet.
I'm curious to know, have you or anybody else looked at tachyon condensation in the context of string field theory using the alternative formalism given by Berkowitz, where, for example, instead of having Q equal to C zero as you have, they have a product of two N equals two, N equals four generators because they embed N equals one and N equals two, in which further gets embedded in N equals four.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're aiming to. Certainly, in the formulation of Berkowitz is for superstrings, and I was just talking here about bosonic strings. So I have not given you a formulation of superstrings around the tachyonic vacuum. If you would try to do that, at least probably the most fruitful way you could begin to do that is in the Berkowitz superstring field theory, and because that is the one that at present has been confirmed more clearly to give the correct tachyon potential, although there's been some sort of double picture version of the cubic superstring field theory that people have said maybe it also does the work, but it's less clear. So you would use the Berkowitz formulation to try to do what we did here, and you could try some operators, but in fact, there's additional subtleties having to do with the GSO projection that we certainly haven't solved. So we did not claim to have done the same thing for the open superstring yet.
Any other question?
Did I understand that you get the correct energy difference between the stable and unstable vacua?
Well, I'm not sure which part of the talk you're talking. I suppose you're...
No, the second part.
Second part, no. We don't calculate... you know, that would have been, let me say it plainly, that would have been the most plain computation you could do. try to get just the solution for a brain and gets its vacuum energy. Now, the only way we would know how to do it at present would be through level expansion. And level expansion added with the Siegel gauge, because this is the only gauge that has been understood quite well enough to produce, to be used for the level expansion. On the other hand, we have found a lot of evidence that the Siegel gauge is not a legal gauge for this string field theory. Therefore, we were a little stuck with computing this direct, doing this direct computation. So we had to resort to compute something in which we could do methods that didn't rely on the level expansion. So it turned out to be a computation that was a little more indirect, but it has its nice parts. So what we try to compute is the ratio of the tensions of a brain to one of lower dimension and see if the answer is the 2 pi that is expected. And even though we had to do some assumptions to obtain that, and that will be explained in much detail tomorrow, despite the set of assumptions, there were some sort of pseudo-miracles that seemed to happen and to give the right answer. So we were pretty encouraged by that, and we'll see that.
Any other question?
If you make a low energy expansion of the string field theory kinetic term with the C0 as QB, do you get the standard kinetic terms for the low energy field components?
No, you get kinetic terms that are so trivial that if you wanted to find the field equations, you would set them all to zero, basically. It's the fact that you shouldn't have any dynamics around that vacuum. It's all off-shell dynamics. There's no on-shell dynamics there, but there's sufficient off-shell dynamics to reproduce back everything. And that's not like a mystery or a very something we just dream about. In the periodic string model, it's exactly illustrated how around that vacuum, the momentum dependence is such with exponentials of p squared that you have absolutely no on-shell states there, but sufficient off-shell dynamics to create back physical states around another vacuum.
There are no other questions. Let's thank the speaker. Announcement.
Me again. Okay, so a couple of things. Is this on? Yeah.